Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
Five, 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 1.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and this week I am actually by myself in the office, and it's the day after Christmas, so Merry Christmas to everybody out there, and wishing you guys all a Happy New Year. We are going to do something a little bit different this week on this episode. Due to the holidays and everything else, we had Dennis attend one of the Colorado APMP webinars, what APMP is the Association of Proposal Management Professionals. We had Dennis attend that meeting and that webinar, and it just really discussed about how proposal managers move their career along and how do you get into becoming a proposal manager. So it was actually a great webinar that he attended. They had four different panel members. They all discussed, introduced themselves. They discuss how they got to where they got. And we thought it would be a good idea just to get that posted and get the masses to hear it. It's a little bit longer this week on this episode, but I think it's all good information, especially if you're working proposals, especially if you're just a single business owner and you don't have a proposal manager, you don't have to do everything yourself. It's good to know all the information, and also might be a good to know to go out and join APMP. Their website actually is apmp.org. Go check them out. They have webinars all the time. Become a member and really understand how proposals are actually put together. So with that being said, that's what we're doing this week. Hopefully we're going to get another one posted this week, another episode of Dennis and I kind of just saying thanks for all their listenership for this entire year. And we're getting ready to start season 3 here in a week. So I appreciate everybody. And with that, this is Just Nate signing off and letting you listen to the APMP webinar.
So we are going to record this, and we're going to make sure that the people who registered are able to view it. So we always kind of have a small crowd, but we often have people who come in and view the recordings after the fact. You know, it's hard to make time for volunteer work or for a professional association, so we understand that. So just keep in mind that we will be recording this for other people. We do have one very fortunate thing in that, like, this is really an opportunity to network and to get to know each other. The goal of a professional association is to create those connections within the industry. So the more participatory you are, the better. We do have a small group, so there's no reason not to be participatory and to make your voice heard. For this, we're going to start with about 6 questions to our panelists, but you should feel free to submit questions in chat as we go, and we'll address them at the second half of the panel. Today's panel is really about giving you an opportunity to see where people have gone with their proposal careers, you know, once sort of like the very base level proposal management jobs that they've been doing have been exhausted once they've mastered those jobs. So we've brought in 3 people, Lisa Puckrin, Daniel Walker, and Jerry Larson, who are people that we find their career paths to be both interesting and aspirational. And we just wanted to have an opportunity to have them talk to us and ask them a couple of questions about their career, and maybe give us some ideas about where our career is going. So I'm going to give them an opportunity to introduce themselves, starting from left to right on my screen. Lisa, would you mind introducing yourself?
Hey everyone, I'm Lisa Pukrin. I'm a Shipley consultant and I'm a global team lead supporting Microsoft business applications on a long-term contract. I live in Utah, so I'm just over the mountains from you guys. Do you guys get a bunch of snow? We're like inundated with snow. So, yep. And born and raised here. I think, do you want us to go into career or just say hello?
I'm muted still. No, you can talk a little bit about where you're working now, but there will be a question where we'll kind of be interested in hearing some of the nitty gritty details about what your career is like.
Okay, I'll stop there then.
Okay. Then next we have Daniel Walker. Daniel Walker, can you introduce yourself?
I can. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate your time this afternoon. So I am a senior digital strategist at PwC. Formerly of Niwot, Colorado, so Boulder County, but I'm currently in North Alabama visiting family for the holidays. So kind of a interesting journey. It's very warm here as opposed to what I'm used to this time of year, but look forward to talking to everybody today and hearing about your questions.
Thanks, Daniel. Fun fact, this is something that Tracy Cerber often likes to share. We actually have a lot of people in APMP in Puerto Rico. So we have like a broad range and it's not cold everywhere we are in this chapter. So it's, you know, we have a broader reach than you would think. Welcome from, you know, a little south of where we are right now. Okay, Jerry, can you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So Jerry Larson, I'm actually Senior Vice President of Sales Operations and Development at MX. I have a really random circuitous background that started as an English instructor. So we will get into that a little bit later, but I am in Utah, have three cute teenage kids and a husband whom I still like after 20 years. And we are loving the snow that's coming in because it makes it feel a little bit more like the holidays. I'm super excited to be here. And I'm actually get the honor of being Anthony's boss. So I get the chance to work with him on a daily basis and work with his team who are absolutely exceptional humans.
Yeah, I'll admit the deck was kind of stacked there. Like being sneaky. Okay, so you know, now that we've been introduced, let's go ahead and get started. And I'm going to lead off with my first question, which is natural, you know, next stepping stone from your introductions. First, can each of you give a brief description of how you started in proposal management and an overview of where you worked and what you did as a proposal manager before you got to where you are now?
Let's start with
Lisa. Let's start with Lisa. Okay. Let's keep going this way.
Sure, sounds good. I have yet to meet a proposal manager who grew up saying they wanted to be a proposal manager. So I was an English major, graduated from BYU, and had pretty much no idea what I wanted to do with that. I ended up in project management, and I was at a company here in Utah called MarketStar, and they have a lot of tech clients, HP, Microsoft, a lot of cell phone manufacturers. And I was working and volunteered to help with RFPs, that famous last words. I know that's happened to other people. Why did we ever do that? And shortly after that, a position became available. And I wanted to share an experience I had with my boss, because I think this is important about career path. I went to my boss at the time who was going to be managing the position. And I said, I'm very interested in this position. He goes, really? He's like, you really? He did not see me for that role at all. I hadn't been with the company very long. He didn't know me very well. I had to go in and sell myself for this position. They were going to post externally, weren't looking at me at all. And so I had to go in and lean in. I'm a big Sheryl Sandberg fan, lean in and, pitch myself. And that was my entrance into the RFP world. Ended up growing a team, managing a team there, worked for HP, grew a team there, and then found my way to Shipley. So back in 2012, I met the Shipley team. Their headquarters is here in Utah, right near where I live. And it's been such a great opportunity to be one of their consultants. I'm sure you're all familiar with Shipley. But they just have such a fantastic methodology. They're a great company. So on and off, I've done consulting for them. And then 3.5 years ago, they asked me to come and launch the Microsoft Business Applications support team. So Shipley has four teams supporting Microsoft. We support Microsoft Azure, Modern Workplace, also some of the support contracts. We have over 100 Shipley consultants now globally supporting Microsoft. So it was fun to launch the team and manage a global team, lots of unique challenges. But I don't think I ever really planned my career path. It just kind of happened. I'd be curious if some people, you know, had it more planned out. But I think one of the important things in establishing your career path is looking for that opportunity and leaning in and even going to bat and sell yourself if you need to, because sometimes you have to do that. And really after that, I think it's once you get on that rung and you start to climb, you do a good job, opportunities come. So, but sometimes you have to create those opportunities out the gate. So thought I would share that.
Yeah, agreed. I love that. And yeah, I think you'll find that, you know, I don't think that we're going to find many people here like made a specific goal to be where they are today and got it. I think part of the fun of this panel will be seeing how people got to where they are. So next up, Daniel, same question, brief description of how you started in proposal management and an overview of where you've worked and what you did.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I would like to echo something that Jerry mentioned earlier, which is the, you know, the indirect route that we all take to this path. I had to chuckle a little bit because, you know, my first job in the proposal industry was actually moonlighting while I had a full-time day job. So I graduated from college with a degree in accounting, thinking, you know, this is going to be a path that I take. You know, I don't know if anyone really has a passion for that field, but, you know, whatever, I found myself in it. And after about a year, I realized like, this is not right for me. You know, I cannot see myself doing this for the rest of my life, and started doing some freelance editing work for a really small defense contractor. Found them on LinkedIn, just reached out. So to Lisa's point about, you know, kind of finding your own opportunities, I probably sent, gosh, I don't even want to say how many applications. If it was 200, that's a gross underrepresentation, right? I mean, just knocked on a lot of virtual doors, really pushed myself. And finally got this chance to do some, almost call it grunt work, right? It's taking content that had been written offshore and customizing it for an opportunity, right? And so it was totally outside of my comfort zone, outside of the scope of anything that I'd done before. A lot of it was very little pay, but I did this at night. So I work all day, do that in the evenings, and kind of build my reputation with this organization. So it turns out they needed a full-time proposal person eventually and brought me on. So wound up building that team out. So left my other career, moved cross-country for that opportunity. And it was a great experience, but unfortunately we sized out of our small business category. And so because of that, there's really this window of where, you know, you can no longer compete with the bigs and you're no longer small. So there's not a need for a proposal shop anymore. So that's when I transitioned over to PwC about 7 years ago. And, you know, I went from being a one person proposal team where I can have, you know, complete autonomy, complete control over everything, really even helping out with capture, with, you know, every aspect of the pursuit, to being one of, you know, 250 people within a proposal ecosystem and all of the complexities that come with that. So, you know, navigating that has really been a challenge, but I think also to the point that Lisa made, there's opportunities within any organization, no matter how big or how small. As I mentioned, when I joined, you know, I was a proposal manager for a very long time. That's no longer my role. I'm now a digital strategist, which is a role that we effectively invented based on work that I was doing. And so, you know, the advice that I'd give to anybody on the call today is, if there's something that you're really passionate about in your current role, I mean, as a PM, you know, we see so many different things. You know, maybe, you know, you have a real passion for design, a real passion for writing, something like that. Do what really makes you happy and do it really well and build a business case around that for it to be its own position. And the opportunity will materialize, right? Like if you can really prove that you're exceptional in a space, that there's, you know, two or three reasons why you are the one for that position, and almost write your own job description, you know, you can really write your own ticket within an organization and within the industry. So find those things that you're passionate about and really make that the core of your personal brand.
Nice. I love that too. Thank you so much. Jerry, do you want to finish us off on this question? What's your journey been like?
Yeah. As I say, I started thinking I was going to be an English professor. So was an adjunct English teacher for a long time. And actually, my journey had several different like Daniel, there were four jobs at one time at the same time as I was having some of my babies. And so there was a lot of late nights happening at the same time. Because I had started in English and Lisa, you and I, it sounds like we're in the same department. So we can commiserate about that. But I started as an English major, got my master's in English and thought I would be an English teacher forever and ever. As I was going through and as I was teaching, I then had a friend who was working as a government contractor for a small firm, and she was subcontracted out to the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. And then her company got acquired by GDIT. Well, so she had reached out to me and said, hey, I know you know tech writing. Can you come help us work in the Defense Acquisition Research Program? And so I was an editor for the Navy for 6 years as a contractor at the same time as I was teaching. And during that, worked all through defense acquisition, but it was on the other side of the desk. It was seeing where there were gaps and how spiral acquisition and some of those other things were working and how they weren't. And it was these naval postgraduate students who were determining how exactly we could drive efficiencies in government contracting, which all of you are joking, you know, smiling right now, because you're like, where can't we drive efficiencies in government contracting, right? Like if you have a section L and section M for paperclips, it's really hard not to drive efficiencies. So did that at the same time and was in that firm for, again, it was Antion, and then it was acquired by GDIT. I was there for 6 years. When I went from there, also to kind of mimic what these two have said, I ended up actually saying, you know, I need something that's closer to home. I need something that I can help out. And I actually walked into a defense contracting firm with my resume and said, I know some stuff and you should hire me. And I got hired on the spot because I just simply have guts and walked in when I didn't know what I was doing. It was a company called Logistics Specialties Incorporated, LSI, which Shipley probably is nodding their head. They know there's some connective tissue up there. So I went and worked for LSI. They taught me how to be on the other side of the desk from defense contracting. And then I worked for a couple of other smaller firms up at Hill. And as I was working there, I got some really great exposure just being a contractor, being a consultant, being able to then see what sections L and sections M look like from the other side. And then from there, and this kind of is a foreshadowing for one of the other questions, why I left is that the public sector was slowly killing my soul. And so I had to leave and go to the private sector in order to sleep at some point, because I had been pulling way too many all-nighters. So at that point, I went to the private sector and worked as a proposal leader and as a solution design consultant at a corporate training firm. And so when I did that, I was writing all of the proposal stuff. We didn't do as much government. It was significantly more corporate, but it still had all of the same challenges and all of the same things that I had done as a proposal director for those government contracting firms. And I still had to be able to discuss exactly what we were going to do and what we were going to execute. And I had to still say what the solutions were and how we were going to design that. So I have a lot of love and nothing but good feelings towards those folks who taught me how to be a proposal director, and those retired colonels and majors who all sat in the room with me and taught me how to write those proposals and how to respond to those things. And there's a lot of, you know, when you're in the trenches with those folks, there is a lot of camaraderie that is built. And when you're all sitting, I think my favorite comment that I got from a red team at that point was, we were a sub for somebody else. We were an 8A. I was working for an 8A at the time, and we were a sub. And the person, as we were going through red team, she said, well, this part didn't give me heartburn. And that was like the best compliment I'd ever gotten, was that I had written something that someone wasn't, you know, horrified by. So anyway, so then as I moved to the corporate sector, I went from that corporate training firm and then went into actual corporate training. And then that's kind of gotten me where I am. So I've since then been in three different spots. But in terms of the proposal stuff, it has always been great to be able to call back on that experience, because then when I'm talking to Anthony and to Catherine, Jessica, and those who are on the team, and everything that they've got going on, I at least have been in that seat and I remember what it's like. And then I can also throw the elbows that they need, because I remember what it's like to get those requests late at night. So.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. And, you know, we had a comment from Marie Christie, who says, guts for the win, always. And yeah, it's striking how in your professional journeys, at some point, each of you had to go out on a limb and just put yourself out there and, you know, show some real actual guts in promoting yourself and getting wedging yourself in there. So the next question I have, and again, we'll start with Lisa. How did you know when you were approaching that big step, like the next big step in your career, when you were going from like the regular proposal management to where you are now? Did there come a point where you felt trapped by the work, or when you felt like you were stagnating in your role? Just tell us a little bit about the lead up to making that big leap.
Yeah, right before I came back to Shipley this last time, 3.5 years ago, I felt like I was kind of, I wonder if some of you guys feel like this. I was feeling kind of on a wheel, like a Ferris wheel. I'd start for a company, you know, be able to like implement stuff and make a difference. But then after a few years, it's like, what's next? I think being an RFP and a proposal manager, it's hard to career path. Where do you go after you are a proposal manager? A lot of people have left a proposal management and gone into other tangents. Daniel, you can hear Daniel's path. A lot of people I've managed over the years are now doing other things. So I think it does give you good exposure to other parts of the business because you're working with so many people, and especially if you're at larger companies. So there are tangents, but what do you do if you like this and you actually want to progress? And for me personally, the next step, so I was starting to feel like, what is my next big challenge? And it was, could I take everything I knew and everything I had learned, and could I help a big company like Microsoft, you know, really, really turn things around? They brought us in. They had another contractor who was supporting Microsoft business applications, and they just weren't seeing good results and weren't happy with the level of service. So they hired Shipley to come in and turn things around. So we had a big job. I think anytime when you go in, I'm sure Daniel felt like this at PwC, anytime you go into a big company and you know they're one of the, Microsoft's one of the top three in the world, you can feel like, what kind of impact can I make at this next big level? And so that for me was, I was ready for a really big challenge. And that big challenge for me was launching this program and developing a worldwide program and literally having results on the line, having to turn things around. So I was ready for a huge challenge. Not always in my career was I ready for that. I'm a mom, I have two kids, and I'm grateful that earlier in my career, I had jobs where I could have a good work-life balance, be there for my children. I'm now to the point my children are grown and, you know, you're ready for that next big challenge. But being a Shipley consultant, and I'm going to just throw it out there, we're always looking for good people. So you guys can PM me on LinkedIn. We are growing our team every year. So, you know, being a Shipley consultant honestly is an honor. And I saw Nancy joined and love working with Nancy. But to work for a company that is showing that kind of thought leadership and to be able to make a big impact at huge companies, that for me was to get out of kind of that grind, that small proposal team, and launch into the big time. It was a great opportunity for me, and I've always been grateful that Shipley gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. That's incredible. I think your, Marie asks another great question, and we'll probably get to this after we've been through this question, but I am interested in this. She asks, on the back of this question, how did/do you manage burnout? We're not going to tackle that right now. Keep that in the back of your minds. Thank you, Marie. Daniel, I'm super interested in your answer to this because you specifically said that like your move was about crafting your career. Can you tell us a little bit about where you were that made you say, okay, it's time to craft this entirely new role?
Yeah. Happy to answer that. And I think, you know, my response might be a little unique just because, again, you know, kind of to Lisa's point, you know, you have this scale of this large organization, and there is, you know, an easy way to create a niche because of, you know, simply the volume that we have, the infrastructure that we've got. But, you know, having been on the other side too, where, you know, working for a tiny organization where, you know, we had 12 employees, right? I think there's ways that you can do both. For me, it was a couple of things. I think it was observing some of my peers and, you know, watching the path that they were taking and seeing others move out of the role. So I sat in, you know, as a PM for about 4.5 years, really doing the same thing. had progressively increasing responsibilities. You know, the jobs that I was working on might get a little larger, the size of the deals might be bigger, the complexity would increase, but you know, the overall day-to-day work that I was doing wasn't changing. But you know, seeing other people move out and move into maybe an operations role, or move, you know, from being a proposal manager into a writer, kind of got me thinking about what other options are out there. So I think that's one advantage that we have as proposal managers, is because we have to be generalists and do everything well enough to get it done if push comes to shove, right? So at least for myself, that's one rule I've always said, is, you know, I don't want to put anything on my plate that I can't own and I can't do it completely. And so I think that really opens doors to us to move into other spaces. And so to get specific about what I was able to do, you know, we noticed that more and more we were wanting to do something beyond just a PDF, or more than just, you know, go to orals with slides on the screen. Now, maybe we wanted to make a presentation more dynamic, make it more interactive, you know, put in a lot of video and, you know, really bring multimedia to this and take it from being, you know, again, kind of like a call that, you know, you would normally be on to, it's almost like a newscast for orals, things like that. And we recognized that that skill set was really outside of what a PM could handle, right? The PM is so focused on the day-to-day tactics of a proposal. All of these other bells and whistles are a really hard thing to manage. And so it's an area where I had some expertise. I was able to, you know, network with some of the members on our team to figure out, you know, what would be needed for somebody who could PM those extra roles. And then we assembled a team around it. You know, we pulled some folks off of live projects, built a job description, and I was able to step from being a PM into that new position. So I think my advice to folks is, you know, even if you don't have the ability to do that immediately, look at what you're doing outside of your day-to-day work that interests you and leverage that more, find more time to do that. I mentioned my moonlighting experience, and you know, Jerry, you mentioned wearing multiple hats at once, but find ways to keep yourself involved in the things that really do interest you and do that more and more, integrate that more into your day-to-day work so that you can find that new role, find that new path, and make that leap.
That's really great. Thanks, Daniel. Sure. Jerry, when did you know it was time to make the jump?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that I would always say, and this goes to the question that was asked, is don't let the jump come because of burnout, because I did. I was exhausted. I'd been pulling one all-nighter a week for about a year, and it was killing me. And so don't, like, just come on the proactive side of making sure that you have drawn the boundaries around what you need, so that the jump does not come because you're pushed off the cliff, but the jump comes because you've already, like, put on the bungee gear and all of that kind of stuff, and you're ready to make the jump by yourself. But backing up a little bit, I've noticed that folks in their careers, as we get up to, through the maturity cycle, I think when we're first in our careers, we start by being pretty reactionary. Folks offer us a job, or one of our friends is working somewhere cool, or, you know, whatever. And so we make jumps based on what we see is coming to us. And it's a very reactionary kind of situation. And then as we get upwards in our careers, the maturity changes to be proactive and to be making those choices based on what we want to do. And so to Daniel's point, like your body of work, right? What is it that you actually will do that you feel like is driving you in the right direction? So I think one of those things that shows that maturity is as you get to be in your career enough that you can see what truly two different things, what drives you, and then also what your superpowers are. Because as a proposal manager, you have a ton of superpowers: detail-oriented, solutioning, writing, being able to see operationally and logistically all of the different impacts of different things, right? Because if you're writing four different sections, you have to know why each of those four different sections matter. Making sure that you can come up with good ideas, you know, editor, consultancy, all of those skill sets come in with being a proposal manager, a proposal director, a proposal writer. And with all of those, then you need to be able to decide, not only do you have all of those superpowers, but which are the most fun for you and which then fill you up, so that as you go towards your next role, you know what it is. So for me, I figured out that consultancy actually was way more fun than just writing. And so consultancy was where I went because I'm a fixer. And so that's been now, like, if I were to say, if somebody said, what do you do? I fix things all day and every day. That's why I'm in operations now, right? And so if somebody said, you know, what is it that really made you love proposal writing. It was the fact that I got to consult with folks and then fix things. And not only like on the paragraph level, but also at the big solutioning level. And that was my favorite thing. So I then, once I left proposal management and went into more of a consultancy role, I kept writing and have edited on the side and written on the side and published on the side and stuff like that, because I still felt like I needed that itch to be scratched, and because it's still part of what makes it me happy and brings me joy, but I didn't have to do it necessarily for my job anymore. And so anyway, so for each of those, I would say, as you come up through your career, don't just take the paths that other people open for you, but also try to figure out exactly what your next path is going to be based on what brings you joy and then where you feel like your superpower can be the most relevant.
Thank you. I want to take a second for the next question. I actually want to step away from the agenda that we'd established. And I do want to come back to Marie's question, which is about burnout. Jerry, you mentioned like burnout was a big driver for why you left, but burnout is not something that you recover from in a day. And if it's a big driver for why you're leaving, it's something like it's a scar that you have to deal with. Can we go starting again with Lisa and talk about like what your experience with burnout was during this journey and how you kind of renewed yourself or overcame that burnout?
Well, I think things have gotten, I think overall, you're all probably going to be like, what? I think overall things have gotten better in the workplace. I'm coming up on, getting close to 20 years in the industry, and it, I feel like back in the day it was just, work you to death. I think it's okay nowadays to set boundaries. You have to first get into a job and you have to earn the respect. You have to pay your dues. But at some point you have, I liked what Jerry said about drawing boundaries. At some point, you've got to kind of draw those boundaries. Otherwise, you're going to burn out. You're never going to make it long term. I actually had this happen about 10 years ago. I thought I was done doing RFPs. The endless cycle. You always just the next one, the next one, the next one. It really can feel that way. And I was working 50, 60 hours a week. And I started to actually feel physical and mental impacts from it after so long. So I had to go to my boss and say, I just am not up for doing these kind of hours anymore. The company was doing well financially. I knew they could afford more resources. I had to go in again and do my business case of that, look, this is not healthy to be working these kind of hours. And they ended up hiring somebody else. So sometimes you have to stick up for yourself. But like I said, you first got to make sure you've got that respect, you've got that trust. But sometimes you have to draw those lines. Another is looking when you're ready for your next career step, look for companies who are family friendly and who are work-life balance friendly. I feel like it's gotten so much better. I listened to Microsoft people talk so much about how important work-life balance is. And I think at a big company like that, isn't it great to see nowadays? I will give another plug for our team. Our contracts are actually capped and we do not work overtime, which has been really great. We are capped at 160 hours a month. So sometimes we may work more, sometimes we work less, but that is definitely the number one thing people like about working on our team. So finding teams that understand that. And then I would say also learn how to control the process. You have to do it nicely. You have to be subtle, but I really value proposal managers who can control the process and not let it control them. I always congratulate my team when they're able to talk teams into submitting early. And talk teams out of things that are destructive behaviors that are causing more time to be put in, who stick up for others who are trying to achieve a work-life balance. So I think really good proposal managers control the process and don't let it control them. You have to be very careful because you still have to be a team player, but there's definitely an art to that. So those are my thoughts.
Nice. Okay. Daniel, how did you feel? Did you struggle a lot with burnout and recovering from burnout, or were you completely immune?
I think I would have to echo everything that's been said so far, and that's one thing that I think is great about these kind of discussions that we have is we realize that, no matter the organization you're in, we have the same struggles. You know, there's similar issues that we all go through. There's a quote by Colin Powell that kind of really resonated with me when I was struggling with burnout. And I took this back to my leadership. He says, don't think of yourself as being totally irreplaceable, right? We all want to do the best job we can. We all want to really put ourselves out there and own this process and be, the driver of the pursuit, really make it our own. But he says, every time that they have a general who thinks they're irreplaceable, he'll tell them, I have five people right behind you that can do your job just as well as you can. Right. And so that's what I've always tried to put myself in that position. It's like, this is just one more pursuit. This is one more opportunity. There'll be another one after this. There's plenty of other people in my team, in our shop, outside in the industry that I can network with, I can bounce ideas off of. This does not all have to fall on my shoulders, and I'm not in this alone. And not put myself in the middle of it so much that if I won the lottery tomorrow and said, okay, guys, I'm done, the process is going to completely fall apart. So it's finding those ways to kind of step back and realize when you're taking on too much and just let things go. Find somebody else that can take something on. So if a team comes to me and says, hey, we want to do something on a project, maybe I push back and say, well, we don't have time to do that, but here's an alternative for something we might can do. And oh, by the way, I'm not owning that. Who on your team can take that on? How can we find somebody to get you to the goal that you need for this client, but not doing something that's going to burn not only me out, but your entire team out? Because that's another observation I'd put out here is, if you're feeling burnout in the process, chances are everybody else who's on that SME team, everybody else who's on that account facing team is there with you, right? So find somebody that you can go to and really present a unified case back to leadership of, hey, we might need more resources, or we might need to consider no bidding some things, right? Because we can't even execute on it if we were to win this, and come up with that case. But yeah, I think for me, it's realizing that there's a process, there's a system, it's a long career, and this one bid is not going to make or break me, right? There's plenty more things in the backlog after this.
Thank you. Yeah, that's good. Jerry, I mean, you've already talked a little bit about this. What else would you like to add on this topic?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would add is just ditto to what both of them said. I feel like we've coordinated. We should all be friends outside of this, because I feel like you're saying something. I'm like, that's what you should do. So there, as the leader, I think what your job is to throw those protective boundaries around your team. And then, again, to Daniel's point, you're there as a leader. If you are the proposal director, you're there as a leader to inspire and to motivate them, as well as to empower them to do it themselves. And so you shouldn't ever feel like you have to do it all. It's the folks that don't delegate well, who actually are just that, A, they're shooting themselves in the foot, and B, they're not great managers because they're not actually empowering their team to take over stuff. And that their team doesn't feel like they can do it themselves and have autonomy. So then as an actual individual contributor, I would say, I will be the first one to own that it's my fault I'm a workaholic. It's not the company's fault, right? Like, to Lisa's point, I think 20 years ago was still a totally different world, because there were some all-nighters that I didn't really have a choice. At the same time, I do feel like I look back for those and I'm like, it's my fault that I didn't draw those boundaries. It's my own fault that I didn't go to my boss 6 months before and be like, you know what, this is killing me. It's my own fault. And I will be the first one to admit that. I think that if you figure out exactly what those boundaries are and then stick to it, that it is easier for them to then justify that budget spend the next year, or it is easier for you to put in qualifications and no bid processes in place because of the fact that you've built those parameters. If they feel like they can use you forever, they will. They just will, not necessarily even maliciously. They're just like, oh, so-and-so can handle it. They can handle anything until you're slowly dying and, have some issues with your mental health or whatever. So so I think that it's up to each of us to kind of protect and figure out what that is. I have told my team, I will always be emailing late at night. That does not mean I require you to email late at night. That just means that I am a night owl. Like that, it's so that, hallelujah, that technology has survived so that I can now, or has evolved so that I can now set it to my emails instead of 2 a.m. could go out at 8 a.m. because they have no idea that I wrote them 6 hours before. So there are certain things like that where you get to set your own parameters for you, and then also just be incredibly transparent with your team as to what the parameters for your team are, so that they know what those expectations are for them. And then, just make sure that you're protecting your team from your leadership as well. Not because, again, because not necessarily they're going to do it maliciously, but because they'll feel like, hey, so-and-so can handle it. They're totally great. They can, we can run lean. It'll be fantastic. And that's not always the case.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. And, you know, just as a side note, thank you personally for your mentorship on that. I feel like I'm a better proposal manager for a lot of the messages that you've taught me in that realm. So let's get back onto our agenda. I'm going to skip question three because I feel like we covered a lot of, you know, the preparation for the leap between careers in some of our previous answers. And let's go to question four, which is, what about your current role do you like better than when you were in previous proposal roles? And what, if anything, do you miss about those previous roles? So Lisa?
Well, I've worked from home now for full-time for almost 4 years. And before that, I was in a hybrid, go to the office 2 days and work from home 3 days. When I first started with HP, I had a very compassionate boss who knew I was had an hour commute and said, would you like to work from home a couple days a week? And that's been another great advancement in the workplace. And I think COVID forced a lot of employers to get more comfortable with work from home. So I side benefit of COVID, who knew? But it's really great to, I personally really love working from home. And I wish I would have had that opportunity when my kids were younger. I feel like I have a better work-life balance. I feel like when I do have to work overtime, it doesn't impact me as much from home. On my lunch break, I can run upstairs and throw a wash in. I can go to lunch with my kids. It really has opened up my working from home has been a wonderful thing, I think, for working parents in the industry. So I love that opportunity. And then I do enjoy consulting full time. And I wanted to just give a little bit of advice about don't burn bridges. It's really tempting in RFP jobs because you can get used and abused. You're the one that has to hold everybody together. And you can just want to burn that bridge and throw the bombs when you're leaving a job. You guys didn't take care of me and throw the bomb on your way out. I will say that as you get older in your career, I've had people come back and ask me to do work for them as they moved on to other companies, and it's created consulting opportunities for me as side projects, and it's been really valuable as I've gotten farther in my career. So I would encourage you, no matter what situation you're in, leave gracefully and maintain relationships because they will benefit you later in your career.
Good advice as always, Lisa. Daniel, what about your current role do you like better, and what might you maybe miss about previous roles?
Yeah, thanks for that. I think, you know, one thing that occurred to me, I would have probably answered this question differently before I came on, but I've kind of, y'all have opened up so many new ways of me thinking here. You know, kind of transitioning from the individual contributor to more of a team lead in the last year, you know, there is that sense of letting go and of knowing that, you know, maybe others on the team are not doing things exactly the way that I would do them. And at first, you know, I kind of struggled with that, right? Because it's, oh, you could do that differently. Or I might've actually said, do that better from time to time privately to myself, but you know, whatever, it's gaining that understanding of how others on the team are going to bring that perspective and learn to build that consensus that, you know, was difficult for me initially, but now I really welcome because it's opened my horizon so much and really opened my mind to different ways of working that I would have never considered. So I think that's one thing that, you know, as you grow and you're mature in your career, that's sort of an inevitable shift, right? Because to the point about setting boundaries correctly, you know, you cannot set the expectation that you can do everything on a pursuit because a team will take that bait. They will pile everything onto you and you're going to wind up, you know, completely burned out in no time. So I think that's just something that you've got to prepare yourself for is, you know, your role will evolve. It will change. You're going to have to move out of that individual contribution role and learn to become comfortable delegating and letting others do things their own way and not, you know, kind of hovering over their shoulder and saying, hey, have you considered that? So I think that's been what I've enjoyed the most and also what's been the biggest challenge for me as I've moved into new roles.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Yeah, I feel that too. Like I was definitely a control freak before I'd started to, until Jerry like invited me to start building a team. And it's been hard, but very enriching. Like let go a little. Jerry, what do you love about your role and what maybe do you miss about proposals?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that my team lets me jump into them sometimes because then I get to scratch that itch a little bit and be in a gold team and it fills me up a little bit. But I this is going to sound really cheesy. And so I'm putting that caveat in there. As you increase in your career and as you get to be more and more of a manager level or executive level, there are fewer opportunities to truly have a tight-knit team and a tight-knit like relationships with everybody. I don't have a ton of people that I can call and vent to. I don't have a ton, you know what I mean? Like it just, I think of our CEO, there's just not a ton of folks that he can call and be like, oh my gosh, it was the worst day, right? Like there's just not. And yet when I was on that proposal team, all of them that I went through, again, we were all sitting in a room for days working on things, right? And I was in DC for 2 weeks at a time or whatever that may be. And you get so tight with those teams with whom you're working. It is so like, there's just relationships there that you make that will last forever. And so though I do feel like I've got really strong relationships with my peer group and with my leadership, I do feel like I miss those days where there were 10 of us in a room for 2 weeks, you know, eating Jimmy John's every single meal because we had no option, right? And there weren't software places like things like Loopio and other CMSs that would gather stuff. And so you were writing a whole bunch from scratch. And I miss that collaboration and that camaraderie that comes from just being in the trenches with folks. Anyway, it's kind of a silly thing, but that is something that I miss. Again, I've scratched the itch of writing and editing in other ways. And so, because I knew that was something that I needed in order to make me happy and bring me joy, but I do miss that piece of it.
Yeah, that's very fair. You know, obviously we don't work in exactly the same circumstances, but I do feel like some of the best moments in proposal management are where you are, as you said, kind of in another response, in the trenches, and you're working with those people. So thank you. You know, let's move on to question five. Like, and this is a big one, but you know, what do you think is the next step in your career from where you are now, Lisa?
That would imply I'm planning my career. This last year, I think it's because of what the job market's like. This last year, I've been approached to do a lot of things that, people have been coming to me for some stuff, and it's been kind of fun to think about maybe there's a day when I can pick and choose my assignments. I can pick and choose what I do. I think that goes back again to don't burn bridges, build relationships, like Jerry said, and, you know, keep your networking friends, keep in touch with people, because someday it's going to come back to where I can see this life where maybe I could, you know, have things coming to me, and wouldn't that be amazing, and set my own schedule, my own terms. So I'm starting to see that in my career. And I think that's exciting, you know, to kind of have those opportunities. But yeah, it's always interesting because you never know what's around the corner. I think it's also being open to new opportunities. You know, it's interesting how Jerry and Daniel's work has gone in different directions. Sometimes, you know, it's great to have a change and go in a different direction too. So I think it's being always open to opportunities and having the right relationships to where those are possible.
Yeah. I mean, this may be a loaded question exactly because like the premise of all the previous questions was, wow, what a weird and twisted trail we walked to get to where we are. And then I'm like, where do you think you'll walk next on this weird and twisted trail? But still, Daniel, what do you think is the next step for you?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think, you know, you framed that up very nicely. It is true. It is a very winding path for all of us. But I think as you grow in the space and mature in your career, you find that it becomes more intentional, right? You realize the things that you love and the things that you hate and kind of want to forge that path around them. So I think one of the most impactful things that I've heard today is don't take the opportunities that are given to you, but really try to forge that path on your own. And so, you know, for me personally, I think that would be looking into, you know, how do we use technology differently? How do we start to scale the models that we've built and that we piloted so well over the last couple of years. And I'd say that's true for anybody on our team and within our organization, is that, you know, there's opportunities to be entrepreneurial within whatever group you're in. So, you know, find those paths, find those things that you enjoy and integrate it into your daily life. And don't think you have to do it all, right? Because technology, the pandemic, the work from home environment, it's really changed everything, right? You can find people on Fiverr, you can find people that are sitting offshore that can do all kinds of really cool creative stuff. So if there's something new that you want to do that's maybe, you know, totally out there, outside of what you're doing all day long, it's easy to build a business case, find talent to help you get there and build that thing out within your own organization, and then take that to your leadership and say, look, here's this crazy idea that I've got. Here's what I need to do to execute on that. And here's the ROI, right? So don't think that because you maybe don't have, you know, resources, or you know, you need something else outside of your current skill set, you can't do what your dream job is. You know, continue to improve, continue to find ways to do what you love and build a case around it.
Yeah, great. All right, that resonated a lot with me. Jerry, what do you think is the next step for you?
I really love the operations side of things. And I think proposal leaders are great at it, because we have to be both detail oriented and strategic at the same time. And not everybody's brains work that way. And the fact that, you know, proposal managers have to be able to take stuff down into the weeds and figure out whether a comma should be somewhere at the same time as figuring out, hey guys, we didn't answer how we're actually going to fill these three seats for this, you know, for this contract. And the fact that that we can be both strategic and tactical at the same time, I don't think is something that proposal managers necessarily concentrate on very often, but it is a skill set, and it is something that most good ones are just inherently good at. I really love it because of the fact that I'm a fixer. And so that's probably where I'll stay for a hot minute, because I love to be able to come into an organization or to be able to come into a department and be able to see what can be better and solution to be able to make those choices. So I think I'll stay there for a while. And then from there, probably my long-term, when I feel like I've hit my number and I can go do whatever I want and be offshore, like they were saying, right? And Lisa, have it come to me. I will probably own my own firm at that point, but we'll get there eventually. I still have some stuff to learn before then, I think.
Yeah, that's nice and very aspirational. Okay, last question. And you've already given so much good advice. Feel free to keep it brief or to keep this as a summary of what you've already said. But what advice would you give to proposal managers who are looking to supercharge their career, or maybe who are just in that rut and they want to get out of the rut?
I think the first thing is, at some point you have to decide if you actually like doing RFPs. I'm saying that because a lot of people fall into them and it's not a conscious choice sometimes. And I had to come to that reckoning about 10 years ago and say, okay, I fell into this kind of, it's a lot of work, it's hard, but is this me? Is this who I am? And am I good at this? Do I love it? What am I passionate about? So if you kind of feel a little lost, I think some good like introspective, what do I love about my job? What do I not like about my job? And, you know, truly trying to identify, is this the right thing for me? And people that I've seen go long-term in RFPs in proposal management, they like the thrill of the chase, which is what I love about it. I still am competitive. I still like to try to win. I love helping the sales teams try to win. They love people. I think it's pretty hard long-term to be in this job if you don't love people. And they love project management. And I think project management is one of your more portable skills into other areas. If you feel like you need a break or a change, you can take those project management skills and go in so many different directions. But I think at some point you just kind of have to have that reckoning with yourself and decide, is this me? Is this what I want? And then if you draw those boundaries and you're able to protect yourself so you don't burn out long term, I think you can do some amazing things. Also, I wanted to comment about management versus non-management. I was talking with a good friend of mine who became a manager recently, and she was talking about the pros and cons of her first management experience. And it seems like a natural progression in a career to then become a manager and manage teams, but it's honestly not for everybody. I think never devalue the value of being an individual contributor. Some people thrive in management and love it. Others, they miss just being able to, you know, just be in their own world and worry about themselves. It's much harder to have to worry about everybody else. So also figure that out about yourself and own it. Do you get satisfaction out of managing people? Do you feel like you're able to enable them? If you are, then there's great paths there. If you feel you're more of an individual contributor, then it's looking for how can you increase your sphere of influence and impact. So I think introspective and at some point in your career is really healthy. Figure yourself out and then know what direction to go based on that.
Thank you. Yeah, I love that. I especially think that I've thought a lot about the difference between individual contributors and managers. So I think thinking about that and reckoning with that is great. Daniel, what is your advice?
No, I think I would echo everything Lisa said. Again, going back to what Jerry was saying earlier, it's almost like we're on the same wavelength here. So this is so great. One of the best pieces of advice that I've got recently from our sales enablement lead here at the firm was, you know, really find what your North Star is and align to that, right? And that could be that you want to be an individual contributor, it could be you want to be a manager, it could be that you want to get completely out of the proposal space and, you know, go do something different. But whatever that is, just really find that within yourself and then determine how that can be leveraged either in this space or somewhere else. Because to the point around, you know, being an individual contributor, there's great value in being a specialist and having a very, very, you know, focused skill set and being, you know, the best in the world, if you will, at one specific thing that you can repeat over and over and over to a team. If that's your niche, that's great. Go in there, specialize, really make it your own, but, you know, find out what that path is going to be. And then another thing that I've observed, I think if you can make it in this industry, in this grind, you can make it anywhere, right? So the skill set's very portable, but we've got folks on our team who have gone, you know, into being content writers, they've gone into being web developers, they've gone into being, you know, marketing coaches. There's really no limit to where you can take the skills that you learn here. And there's tremendous respect for proposal managers because other organizations get it, right? They know how hard we work. They know our dedication. So once you've proven yourself for a couple of years in this industry, you can write your own ticket.
Nice. Yeah. Like that's very, very aspirational. I too would like to write my own ticket soon. No threats, Jerry. That's just like, I'm very interested in like, what am I good at? And what can I do to actually bring value where I am with things that I'm really passionate about? Jerry, can you finish us off here?
Yeah, I was just going to say essentially that. Make sure that you know what your elevator pitch would be. What are you absolutely exceptional at? Each of us are given our own skill sets and each of us are given our own talents. You don't have to make yourself into the person sitting next to you. In fact, please don't, because companies need to be made up of a jigsaw puzzle of people, and you need to all be able to bring and augment different skills. The team should not all look like the same avatar ever in any organization ever. And so be your own person, figure out what it is that you bring to the table, and then hone that, be the best version of yourself. So that would be the first thing that I would say is just, I hope that anybody does that, right? Don't ever apologize for what you're super good at. And don't be one of those people who's like, oh, if somebody says, hey, you're great at this, don't be like, oh, well, so-and-so does it better. No, just say, thank you. Like, you're great at that. That's okay. And it's okay to just own it and just know that you are exceptional at what you do. And so I would say if I could empower anybody who's at the beginning of their career, or even who's struggling, is just figure out exactly what you're good at and rock that and just dive in so much. The next thing that I wish, like the advice that I wish somebody had given to me long, long ago, and instead I got it most recently, and I kind of figured it out along the way, but I wish I'd gotten, my 21-year-old self would have gotten it, is assume good intent. So to Lisa's point, like, just make sure, first of all, don't be a jerk, right? The world is a very small place and everybody, like, things come back all around no matter what. But also just assume good intent. It's really hard on the proposal writing side when no one really has sat in that seat except your team, right? To know exactly how hard it is. assume that they don't know how hard it is, and assume that they're not trying to be jerks at you. I think that if you can just assume that they are trying as hard as they can, and they're not trying to keep putting things on you, and that they are good humans, I think that that will go a long way to make your jobs less less hard every day. I think if all of us can just assume that everybody who's on the Zoom calls with us is all just doing the best they can, and they're not trying to, you know, to cause problems or to make it so we work late that night, or, you know, they just don't understand what they're bringing to you. If they ask you to do 65 questions by tomorrow, they just don't get it. It's not that they're really just trying to be a jerk face. So I think if you can assume that good intent and bring that to every call, that's going to help perpetuate your goodness and to help you write your own ticket later.
That's great. Thank you. Well, we're just about at time. I'm sorry that we didn't have time for more audience questions, but I will say that, you know, running a panel is a very curious thing. Like as I was moderating the questions, it occurred to me that like, I'm really the person who gets the most out of this. I wish every one of you who are on the call right now could be in the hot seat right now and be speaking with these wonderful individuals, because I feel like having to sit down and interact with these people and really understand what they're saying, just it expands your horizon so much. I hope that even without you being like on the panel or moderating it, you were still able to get a lot out of it, because I think this is an incredible conversation. I'm deeply inspired by it. Yes, please feel free. Anyone who wants to connect with our people, I'll make sure if Daniel, you're good with it, I'd love to send out links for people to connect and follow everyone on LinkedIn. And I'll be sending out the recording for this to everyone who registered afterwards. And thank you so much to everyone for attending. I think this is a fantastic panel.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. Happy holidays.
Yep. Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of the SmallsCast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode. See you at the next episode.